From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you right at the half point here in next hour. Did God create that tragic tsunami in December? A major discussion on this and other issues with our guest, Bart Cosco, at the top of the hour, right here on Coast to Coast. Well, earlier they thought it was a 6.9 magnitude. They have dropped it down a little bit to a 6.3, but it was an earthquake that hit south of Panama, and they came out very quickly and said, you do not have to worry. There is no tsunami fears for California, Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, or Alaska. However, there was a tsunami warning issued for Hawaii and other areas of the Pacific. Nothing has happened. New York City police were questioning people and studying video surveillance tapes to determine who may be responsible for detonating two makeshift grenades outside the building that houses the British consulate early in the morning. The explosions, which occurred on Britain's election day, in which, by the way, Tony Blair, elected to the third term now, caused the glass panels at the building's entrance in Midtown Manhattan to shatter, but no one was injured. A one-foot chunk from the planter was also torn off. Nobody's reported seeing anybody. People heard explosions, though, but we're questioning everyone, according to the New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. The capture of the man believed to be Al-Qaeda's number three has revived hopes of finally closing in on the world's most wanted terrorist, Osama bin Laden. Pakistani officials, who recently, as close as March, said the trail for Osama bin Laden had grown cold, have now hailed this week's arrest of Abu Farak al-Libi as a major step to tracking down the reputed commander for him. The Libyan-born terror suspect is said to have been a close comrade of bin Laden since the early 1990s, when they both fought for the Taliban in Sudan. U.S. intelligence officials, who have been hunting bin Laden since President Bush declared a war on terror, expected al-Libi to have information on the elusive leader, blamed for the 9/11-2001 attacks on us. While in Iraq, the U.S. military is examining reports now that the insurgent leader there, Abu Musab Zawakari, has somehow taken ill, maybe wounded. They're just not sure. U.S. officials giving really no details as to why they believe Zawakari may be sick or injured, but U.S. military authorities quoted this month as saying that he had left medical information about himself on a laptop computer that was seized in February in his closest known call with American pursuers. When his car was pulled over at a checkpoint outside Ramadi, Zawakari fled on foot, leaving behind the laptop, photos of himself, and contacts. But the news continues to be bad in Iraq as insurgents killed at least 20 people in three separate attacks targeting Iraqi security forces, including one by a man who blew himself up while waiting in line outside of an army recruitment center, a similar attack by a suicide bomber standing in line outside a police recruitment center in the northern Kurdish city of Erbil killed 60 Iraqis and wounded 150. The U.S.-led coalition is trying to train as many Iraqis as they can so they can minimize troops there. Doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. Cases of humans being infected with bird flu seem to be rising in Asia, and there are worrying signs that the virus is mutating now into a more transmissible form. But experts say bureaucratic delays will probably defeat attempts to stop a human pandemic in its tracks. We're going to talk about this with an expert in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Henry Nyman earned a Ph.D. at the University of Southern California in 1978. He took a postdoctoral position at Scripps Clinic and Research Foundation, where he developed monoclonal antibody technology. In 1982, he developed the flu monoclonal antibody, which is widely used throughout the pharmaceutical, biotech, and research industries. Some of his monoclonal antibodies were distributed worldwide to researchers by the National Cancer Institute. Dr. Nyman became interested in infectious diseases while at Harvard's medical school. He then founded Recombinomics and discovered how viruses rapidly evolve. He is our guest right now on Coast to Coast. Henry, did I pronounce the name of your company correctly? That's an interesting one. Great. I hit it on the first shot. Very good. We have from time to time talked about diseases and viruses and pharmaceuticals and vaccines on this program, and I'll get into some of that with you in a moment. But tell me a little bit about what this new possibility is about this flu pandemic now that may, of course, start in Asia and then spread elsewhere. What's going on with that, Henry?
Right. Well, most of the effort, our concern is really on a virus called H5N1. And it's an avian virus that normally infects birds. And it first appeared in Asia back in 1996 and first infected humans in 1997 in Hong Kong. That outbreak was contained. 18 people were infected and 6 died. And Hong Kong essentially culled all of the birds in the city, and it didn't reappear until 2003, and there were just a couple of cases. But then at the end of 2003, it really appeared throughout almost all of Eastern Asia, from Japan and China all the way down to Vietnam, Thailand, and Indonesia. And that was an unprecedented outbreak of H5N1. Because it's called a highly pathogenic avian influenza, because it's very lethal in chickens in particular, and that happened last year. And the first human cases were in Vietnam and Thailand, and it had a case fatality rate of 70%. So 70% of the people diagnosed with the virus ended up dying. The number of people were limited, and most of the activity was really in birds. But this year is back again, particularly in Vietnam. And the big concerns really have started probably in March, because the reason it hasn't been as big a threat to humans is it's a bird virus, and it doesn't grow that well or infect humans very efficiently. That seems to be improving. So the human-to-human efficiency has gone up. The lethality has actually gone down. And the concern is that that's a bad combination. Because
Is this mutating now? Is that what's happening?
Yes. It's actually recombining, which is why I formed Recombinomics. that's what the problem is that if the same host is infected with two different viruses, the viruses exchange genetic information, and you get a new version that comes out of that dual infection. And right now, the virus that's causing the problems in humans and kills humans can actually grow asymptomatically in ducks, and now at increasing frequency in chickens. So the amount of virus this present is going up dramatically. And a second infection of that same infected animal leads to a new version. And that seems to be what's happening, particularly in northern Vietnam. So in northern Vietnam, you're getting a virus that has a 20% case fatality rate. But the big red flag actually happened in March when a family of 5 all showed up at the hospital at the same time. Prior to that, there had been limited human-to-human transmission, but it would usually be just one or two family members. This was a husband, a wife, and all 3 kids. They all showed up on March 22nd in northern Vietnam, and then they were all confirmed to be H5N1, and they all recovered, actually. So the new virus is actually one amino acid shorter, and therefore it just has to do with how it gets into cells. So it doesn't get into cells quite as easily, and as a result, the cases are somewhat milder. But that may sound, superficially, that would be a good thing, yeah, the virus. But what happens is then people that are infected with the virus basically can walk around and affect other people.
And not even know it, right?
Right. And yes, there's even been examples of asymptomatic people. So there's asymptomatic ducks, chickens, and people now all walking around with H5N1.
If somebody ate an infected chicken or a duck, for example, would they come down with this disease?
Not if it was cooked. I mean, the virus is susceptible to heat. You could come down with it indirectly through cross-contamination. So if you had an uncooked chicken and you were cutting it up and the knife had some virus on it and it touched a vegetable and you ended up eating the vegetable, then you could get infected. Or if you got it on your hands, and then hand-to-mouth transfer is the most common way. But the cooked meat would actually not have the virus, but you could essentially cross-contaminate utensils or other non-cooked foods and get infected that way.
All this is going on in Asia, not happening here. Why the concern?
Well, basically, as was seen with SARS, most of these infectious diseases are literally one flight away. And it's very easy for the flu to transmit via international air travel. But on top of that, if the virus achieves the human-to-human transmissibility that's seen in normal flu, the normal flu is very contagious, and it moves around the world and the country extremely quickly. And there was actually a good example of that here in the United States. This year there was a strain called California that appeared in Santa Clara, California in September of 2004. And the CDC actually has monitoring of viruses throughout the country, and they typed them. And California really didn't start showing up until like the second week in January, and within 1 month it had basically covered the entire United States, and now it's actually covered the entire world. So the virus, because it has a short incubation period, because it's very contagious, and because you can transmit even before you have symptoms, is very easy for it to move around the world. And so if it achieves that type of transmissibility, it will not stay in Asia more than hours, literally.
A couple researchers in Asia said that the Korean food that they use, it's a cabbage called kimchi.
Right.
If you use that, they seem to imply that this is fighting this disease, this virus. Do you agree with that? Do you know about this?
Oh, I've heard the results. They basically tried it on some birds.
And, yes.
And they did have positive results. How well that would translate into people and how long an effect it would have. I don't know if you have to eat it continuously 24 hours a day or, those types of issues. But, it's certainly something to be, looked into. But I don't know that it's necessarily a cure-all, just because you never really know exactly when you're going to get exposed to the virus.
It could be an immune booster, for all we know, right?
Right, right. So, yeah, I'm not sure how long-lasting it is or exactly how the experiments were designed, but they could show an effect in birds. But I'm not sure if it was, in their feed and it had a long-lasting effect or if it had to do with when they were fed and when they were exposed.
Henry, in the 6 minutes that we have left, let me ask you some things about vaccines and some other viruses as well. You're an expert in 1982. You developed the flu monoclonal antibody. I have never taken a flu shot. Knock on wood, I've never come down with the flu. I do not tell people on this program to get a flu shot or not to get a flu shot. That's their own call. Why don't I get it? Other people do. We were 50 million doses short last year, and the CDC comes out and says that the flu season was very mild. Do we really need vaccines? I've had guests on that tell us no, we don't. But I want to get your thought on that.
Well, it really depends on your circumstances. Generally, if you get exposed to the flu naturally, you will make a long-lasting immune response. There was actually an experiment that was done a few months ago. It was published in Nature, and it had to do with the 1918 flu pandemic. And they had essentially recreated two of the genes for that and therefore they could assay antibodies. And they collected serum from people that were alive in 1918. They collected in 2004, and they still had antibodies. So they had antibodies 7 years later. So generally, if you get exposed to the same strain that you've been exposed to in the past, you won't generally get sick unless you have some type of compromise of your immune system. However, the flu vaccine does work, and there are some arguments that really if more people were vaccinated, there would be less of the flu. And there's even an argument that the children should be vaccinated, because even though they don't get deathly ill or die most of the time, they do transmit it a lot. So you have a population that basically gets infected, and they infect their grandparents, and they infect schoolmates, etc. And so you have a lot of virus floating around simply because you have a susceptible population, and you have a quite a bit of the virus present. So the vaccine does have applications in that regard. And then they're really, right now, they're almost the only defense against a pandemic. And the problem with the pandemic strain is that it really attacks young people. It doesn't have much discrimination, and there's even some arguments that people with a more robust immune response get into more problems because it's so strong that it sets off this cytokine storm that basically attacks all your organs, and people literally bleed to death. Their organs actually melt because of the antibodies that they make against the virus.
Have you heard anything about that 57 flu strain test that was sent out to all those labs, and they had to run all over the planet to try to collect them?
Yeah, that was... Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because there's a situation in South Korea now that makes the H2N2 fiasco kind of look like a walk in the park. The H2N2 was 1957. And even though it was a pandemic, it was the mildest of the pandemics, and it mostly affected older people, most of whom aren't alive anymore. And it was a virus that went to labs and a proficiency test. So the labs pretty much knew how to take care of the virus, and they all had FedEx tracking numbers, and they all had a sign for it. It was a $600 test, so it just didn't go out to anybody. And so it was fairly easy to recover. Now, there's somewhat of an analogous situation in South Korea right now, and that's a virus from 1933. So the argument for the 57 was that people born after 57 didn't have antibodies.
Right.
This was a 1933 virus, which is actually the first human virus ever isolated. And it has made its way into swine in South Korea. And it's actually killing the pigs in South Korea. And
This isn't widely known. Not a lot of people are talking about this.
Well, if you go to the website, you can see a lot about WSN-33. But I think that it'll be pretty widely known shortly, because actually today WHO was notified that the results are real.
Okay.
They've been arguing for the last 6 months that it's a lab error, but they actually had people at the lab who saw the data and brought it to Manila. So it should change pretty dramatically in the next week or two.
And your website, okay, is recovenomics.com, linked up with your name right now on coasttocoastam.com. Very briefly, Henry, what else does your company do?
Well, we actually look at how viruses evolve, and we actually predict new viruses before they emerge. And then we use that to actually make vaccines. So right now, we've basically protected the intellectual property for that, and then we will be making vaccines.
Tell them to get the mercury out of some of these vaccines.
Right.
A lot of people, I think, would be a little more secure with that, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, the mercury, especially on the childhood ones, it is
absolutely
coming out.
Absolutely. Henry, thank you for the update, and let's keep in touch. We're going to use you as a resource in the future, okay?
Okay, George. Good talking with you.
Dr. Henry Nyman, interesting company that he put together several years ago. We've got open lines for you now this half hour. West of the Rockies, 800 618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. And our wild card line, 818-501-4109. All the lines open for you right now. So it's your turn. I'm George Norrie, back with Open Lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
This part of the show, listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
I want to have an added hello to everybody in New Orleans listening to us and Dr. Morgus Land, of course, because, you know, we've been on for some time and we still are the very fine AM station, WSMB, where we are very highly rated in the market in New Orleans. But we are also on now the Monster, 870 AM, WWL AM. That station goes into, gosh, I can't count the states that goes into. So that big station, WWL, joins the growing list of affiliates here on the Coast to Coast family. Great to have you with us. Thank your lucky stars you don't live in Australia going to this cafe. A cafe owner paints over a dead rat rather than pick it up. He's been fined £12,000 there. Acting on a tip from staffed food inspectors in Brisbane, Australia, discovered the rodent stuck to the floor. I'm not trying to make you sick here. Some of you might be munching on something now. Stuck to the floor, covered in red paint under the main serving area of the restaurant. The rat was just one of a series of finds, which included a giant fungus, other rodents, both dead and alive, yuck, cockroaches, and dinners rescued from bins before being reserved. Man, am I glad I didn't take a trip to Australia and go into that cafe. The June issue of the After Dark newsletter is going to be a collector's item. It's edited by our own webmaster this time, Lex Lonehood. So Lex is putting together a collector's item edition. It's called the UFO Special for After Dark. Take advantage of it. And when you order it, you also get 14 for the price of 12. So it's a pretty good deal. Call this number. 1-888-727-4900. 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at Coast, C-O-A-S-T, Coast 2, T-O, coasttocoastam.com. So I looked at the old calendar. Next Friday, when we have open lines, Friday the 13th. I love open lines on Friday the 13th. Let's go to the phones east of the Rockies. Why don't you get us started? You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you?
This is Brandy in Texas.
Hello, Brandy. What's going on there?
What I'd like to know is, what is the function of mercury in the immunization compound? Everybody talks about it, but we don't know what the function of it is.
You know, I had read that a long time ago. It's supposed to be something that reacts with some of the other ingredients that they put in there. But I've got to tell you, it's unnecessary. I'm not a doctor, definitely not a researcher. But everybody I've talked to, they think this needs to be taken out immediately. There are some laws that they're working on that will phase mercury out of vaccines, but it's not happening soon enough. And quite frankly, you know, have you ever dropped a thermometer and you see the mercury just wiggling around on the table, Brandy? Have you ever done that?
The mercury is in your thermostat on the wall.
It's everywhere like that. And that little tiny droplet, they tell you, if you were to eat it, you could get seriously hurt from that. You might even die. So I'm saying to myself, what are we putting this junk in vaccines for? It's got to go and it's got to get out of there. There's no beneficial use for it.
Well, the next time you get somebody on there, I'd like him to specifically say why the mercury is in the immunizations and what is the function of mercury from his viewpoint.
If they know, right?
Well, they ought to. They're experts, aren't they?
Thanks, Brandy.
Thanks.
Experts, that's what they are. Wildcard Line, it's your turn. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
That's me.
Yes, sure is. Where are you, sir?
Okay, I'm Ray from Omaha, Nebraska. KSAB.
Sure thing.
50,000 watt station.
Another monster. They're everywhere.
Yeah. Anyhow, I want to tell you two things. One thing, last spring, a dog got bit with one of his playmates, you know, got a skin tore. So his master told him, I'm going to take you to the vet tomorrow when I get off work. So DeMar came and had the dog in the pen in the backyard. Dog got out, walked six blocks down to the vet, and scratched on the door. The vet opened the door and recognized the owner of the dog because it's been there quite often, not once in a while. And the doctor called the master and didn't find him at home, but then he called his office and found him at work and told him about the dog, and the dog said, go fix the dog up, and I'll pick him up when I get off work.
I love it. What an animal, huh?
Yeah. And the other story is, about 10 years ago, wife and I were driving back from Niagara Falls around Cleveland, Ohio, and we saw a rectangle in the sky like a big picture, window.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was perfectly rectangular, with light clouds in the middle, perfectly smooth, with darker clouds on the frame on the outside. And so we stopped the car and looked around the sky, and we saw two more smaller rectangles. And I tried to take a picture, but when I got the film developed, I found out my camera was bad.
Now that happens. Now, what do you think all this was, Ray?
I don't know what caused those squares in the sky. We called the Weather Bureau, and the Weather Bureau said they never seen anything like that, but it must have been in a tornado area. And so he asked me where it was, and I said, on the interstate coming out of Cleveland. He said, oh, that's sort of a semi-tornado belt, but I don't know what that would have to do with making perfect windows. Because if I was a pilot in an airplane, I would attempt to go over and drive right through it.
Well, let me ask you this. You don't think they were windows that had got sucked up by these tornadoes and they were just flying around up there, do you?
No, these were... they were big things. They were high in the sky.
That means there's something else going on.
Our Bell had somebody that said they found perfect, they saw perfect circles in the sky.
Are you a believer in extraterrestrial life, Ray? You still there, Ray?
Yeah.
I don't know
what those rectangles were caused from.
Okay. I think you bleeped yourself out. I mean, do you believe in life out there beyond our planet?
Oh, that's a possibility because God could create other universes besides ours.
That's a good point, Ray. Hey, thanks for the call. Next up, first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello. Hey, hello. George. This is Alex from Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Hi, Alex.
I was wondering about the July 4th satellite going into the meteor.
Oh, yeah. It's called the Deep Impact.
Yeah. I was wondering if we were going to be able to see that from, like, in our nighttime sky.
There's a certain region that will be able to see it. I think it'll be available more in the southern part of this country. So you may be able to pick that up. And you might also be able to see something with the naked eye. If you had binoculars or a telescope, you'd have a better shot at this thing.
Okay. Well,
I just hope they don't blow that thing up and cause problems for us. I also think that it could be a test to see what would happen for... Now, this is a comet, by the way. But what would happen if an asteroid was coming this way? As a Russian reporter thinks, by the way, and we needed to blow the thing up. I wonder if it's a test for that. Who knows? West of the Rockies, where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
And once. Yeah, go ahead.
My name is John Einem.
Hi, John. Where are you?
I'm in California.
Okay. What city?
Arcata. I'm, like, way up north.
All right. What's on your mind, John?
Well, I'm a programmer, and I remember hearing a show you did a long time ago about random numbers.
Well, that was Art, first of all. I did another one after that, but Art did that first one, yes.
But I'm a programmer. I don't program for any company, but I program on my own. And,
okay.
I've been with computers for many, many years. I'm a math major, and I've gone through calculus and everything, and I've written a rather unique algorithm that can generate true random numbers.
Oh, is it accurate?
Yep. I've actually tested it with the die-hard test, the tough test for random numbers, and I've tested it with, you know, writing my own programs to test it.
All right, now how would you use it? Give me an application. Give me a for instance.
Well, like for data encryption, you put a seed in, and the seed could be like 64 characters or like roughly equivalent to 1024 bits of data. You know what a bit is, right?
Yeah, but I don't know nearly as much as you do about this stuff.
A bit is, like, there's 8 bits in 1 byte. And 1 byte is approximately 1 character.
Well, tell me how am I going to use it to help my day-to-day life?
Well, you know, internet on the, you know, for privacy, you know, because privacy is becoming a major number one concern on the internet.
And this would help that?
Yeah, like if say you're doing online business.
Okay. Like, let's say you're looking at your bank account or something.
Yeah.
All right. What would you do? How would you use this program?
Well, like when you enter in you're entering in sensitive information like your bank account number or whatever or account numbers. You know, if you encrypt the data, then you know you send it encrypted. Then.
Now, would the bank still be able to pick it up?
Yeah, they would have the decryption software on their end.
Hey, you may make $1 billion on this thing.
Maybe.
All right, good luck. If you do, remember that we helped you out a little bit here at Coast to Coast. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. It's your turn. Hello.
Yes, hi, George.
Hi.
You were just talking about the Mercury. We just got a bill through the House in Florida to get rid of the mercury poisoning. We had 2,000 children here with autism from it. It also causes Alzheimer's. And I worked in a mercury plant. My dad was a doctor. I knew about this. And so I sent it to all the reps. I sent it to the Attorney General of the United States. I said,
good for
I want
you.
Charges brought. Then I called the FDA and chewed them out. And then I sent it to the president. And so now it's going to go to Washington. And, I mean, I was horrified. Thank God this girl that is in the newspaper here, she wrote a huge article telling exactly what it was doing, which, I mean, I saw people drop dead in the mercury plant I worked in that put mercury in the thermometers.
Why do they put it in vaccines? Is it just a scam?
And
is that what they do?
Jonas Salk knew about this when he first started making the polio vaccine,
yeah.
But he said it later on it needed to be taken out, and they never did.
So this preserves the shelf
yeah.
life of
yeah.
a vaccine.
Yeah, but the thing is, they have other stuff they can do it with, but the thing is, I don't think they really care, and I told the FDA today, I said, you all belong in jail.
They're slowly killing us away, aren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, thank God, but have everybody call their reps, because it's going to Washington from here, and I told GW, I want you to sign it. I told Jeb Bush, I want it signed as soon as it's done.
Good for you. You keep it up.
So anyway, just, you know, everybody out there, call your reps big time.
From now on, when you call the show, whatever you call us on, you just use the name The Mercury Lady, okay?
Okay.
And then we'll know it's you.
Okay, hon.
Yeah, you got a deal. The Mercury Lady. First-time caller line. Welcome to the program. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from El Cajon. It's in San Diego on Cogo. My name is Mike from El Cajon.
Are you in Oklahoma or in San Diego?
El Cajon, San Diego.
Oh, okay. Now I can hear you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm a million miles away. You do know I'm broadcasting tonight live from the... I'm in the International Space Station.
Well, you know, I'm calling from my bathroom, unfortunately.
From
your bathroom?
Caught me
outside. It was so quick. I was like, but...
How long are you going to be in there?
I'm leaving right now. But, you know, George, my wife has listened to you for years and years and years, and I was the biggest non-believer. I used to give her so much crap about, oh, these guys, these hocus-pocus, you know, type of... But you know what? You guys, I mean, you guys, it's just... real. I mean,
Of course it's real.
I'm hooked, and I believe in a lot of the stuff that the government's doing and space stuff, and I'm convinced.
Look, I don't believe everything that is on this program. I don't believe every guest. I don't believe every caller. But I'm looking for the truth just like you are. And some of the
George,
callers...
George, you have tremendous patience.
Well, you have to be. You have to in this kind of a program, in this kind of format. So you go back to doing whatever you were doing, and we'll move on here as well. But thanks. Thanks for your support, and appreciate the fact that your wife's been a long-time listener to Art in our program as well. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Steve calling from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, Steve. I spent a year living up in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah, it's a nice place to live.
It's gorgeous. Does it get cold like it used to, does
nope.
it? Something strange.
But I was in Brownsville, Texas back in 1996, and I was going through a kind of a real rough time with depression, and all of a sudden I'd wake up in the morning with this tremendous energy, right? I was living
yeah.
in an apartment called Nelroy. It's downtown Brownsville, and a friend of mine had spent the night, and... I woke up in the morning with this tremendous energy, and I sat down on the floor, and I sprung up without using my hands, right? Hello?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just trying to picture this.
Yeah, I sprung up. I couldn't explain the energy, but my friend witnessed it. And later on, I got divorce papers from my ex-wife up in Spring, near Houston. I went downtown, and I still had this tremendous energy, and I went to call my ex-father-in-law to find out what's going on with this temporary adoption of my daughter. And all of a sudden, I got mad, and I said, don't hang up on me, Gary. And I hung up the Southwestern Bell telephone, and it broke right off in exactly in the middle, and it hung there by the wires. And I said, what's going on here? So he said, go across the street and see if you can break that phone. I hung it up one time, and this time it broke right down the middle again.
When you said you hung it up, you didn't slam it. You just put it back on the receiver, right?
Yeah, I just more or less hung it up, and I swear it, I got a witness to it that saw me do it. I broke that one, and it broke right off in that in half, when I pulled down on the receiver, the wires and all came out.
Maybe you're the Incredible Hulk now or something.
But then later on, I got stopped when I was coming out of the bar. It was called the Circle J Bar in the Market Square, downtown Brownsville, about 4 blocks away from the Matamoros, Mexico. And the police said, "Oh, you smell like you've been drinking." And I stood up on one leg and everything. I said, "I haven't been drinking." And I ended up in the city jail, and I never got to see the judge.
And did they give you a breathalyzer?
Oh, no, they never gave me any kind of a sobriety test at all. But they put me in the city jail, and everybody else got to see the judge the next morning. Well, the days started going by, you know, and it's 7 days, and then they transferred me over to the county jail. I said, "What's going on? I'm going to sue you people." Yeah, I told them, "I'm going to sue you people." I said, "What's going on?" And I got no explanation. And I went from the county jail. I was there for about 5 days, and then they brought me to what they call the adult detention. And there was never any explanation. And all of a sudden, it was around lunchtime. They said, we're going to take you to the mental hospital. And I got to the mental hospital, and this real spooky lady started asking me questions, and she had a big smirk on her face the whole time. Next thing you know, the guys come up, and they wrestled me down to the floor, and they gave me a shot they said was hell doll.
Where are you calling from now? Are you, like, out?
Oh, I'm St. Paul, Minnesota now.
Well, I know you're in St. Paul, but are you in some kind of institution?
Oh,
are you
no,
in
I'm
house? Where are
my
you?
Apartment now.
Oh, they finally let you go.
Oh, yeah. This was back in 96 this happened. But I honestly don't know what they did to me, but they said when they had me in that padded cell originally at the jail, they transferred me over to the county jail, like I said, and then the adult detention. And the guard comes up, and I remember you from the city jail. I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I don't remember you." He said, "Yeah, we saw colors around you." And I said, "What do you mean, colors?" "Yeah, you got a lot of power when you wake up in the morning." And I did. When I woke up in the morning, I had that tremendous power. So I knew right away that the guy was honestly telling me the truth.
Do you still have this power?
Well, whatever they did to me, he said, you know, they didn't take you to a hospital like you thought back in 96. This was in the year 2000 when the guy told me this.
Where'd they take you?
I was back in that same padded cell. And he says, they took you somewhere else. Don't you know what they did to you? And I said, I don't know what they did. And I just took a guess. They probably took me to a witch. Because I believe I was going through a spiritual experience.
Well, let me tell you, I've got to move on because we are at the top of the hour, but I have no idea where they took you. Does anybody? I'll be back.